Welcome to episode 122 of the Atomic Powered Supercast, with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Underwater Welder by Jeff Lemire. And now, the cast begins. Okay, everybody, welcome to another submerged episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey.
And David.
Hey.
See how I mixed it up there that time? You got to keep it fresh. It's been 122 episodes. You got to mix it up every once in a while.
I think you do mix it up.
Well, thank you.
We don't always do it the same order.
Almost always.
I don't know.
Sometimes it feels sexist to do the two dudes first and the woman last.
You can justify that by saying you're doing it in alphabetical order, because that's correct.
You are. That's true. That is a good excuse. Anyway, this week we read Underwater Welder, which is a graphic novel from last year. This is the last episode of our Best of 2012 series. Story and art by Jeff Lemire. Lemire?
I don't know. Lemire. I was reading as Lemire.
Let's say Lemire. It's Lemire. Done. Lemire. Decision made.
Okay.
So this is, like, there was a bunch of stuff that we looked up when I looked up the Best of 2012, and almost all of them were trade paperbacks. And this is one of the few graphic novels that was on the list. And it was in every single list. But I had never read it before this. I'd never even heard of it before this. I'd never even seen it on a shelf at a comic book shop before this. Like, my first interaction with it was going and doing this research. Had you guys even heard of this comic before we picked it to read? Or
No. Just like you, I didn't know about this until the best of list started popping up at the end of the year. So,
Yeah. I hadn't heard of it at all either.
Yeah, which is so weird. I don't know. Maybe we can talk about this later, or maybe we can talk about this now, but it's so weird to me. Maybe it just doesn't get billing because it's a graphic novel, because it's not a cape story. I don't know where that prejudice comes from, why I've never heard of this, because this thing is awesome. I really like this.
Yeah, I think for me it's that I have a pretty tight budget for comics for myself, and I tend to stick to the big two because my favorites are there, and unfortunately, I tend to miss a lot of these cool titles that come out from the indie publishers. So I'm glad that we decided to do this arc, because I'm really happy that I got to read this comic.
Yeah, what publisher is this even? I don't even.
It's a top shelf.
What else do they do? Anything? I don't even know. But this thing was great. Do you guys like this too as much as I did? Like, my first I just want to say how awesome this is.
Yeah, I thought this was really, really good.
This was amazing. Like, by the end I was so engaged in it that I just, like, had to step back after I finished reading it and be like, "Wow, that was it blew my mind."
Yeah, and I like that it engages you like that when it's not a big story. Like, the comics I'm used to reading are the Cape comics, Marvel, DC, that kind of stuff. And it seems like those publishers, those stories, they think the only way you can get that kind of interaction, the only way you can get that kind of hook, and the only way you can get that explosive ending is by having it be like Blackest Night, where the Avatar of Death itself comes up from the ground to conquer the world. Like, that's the only way you can have an amazing story to do something like that. But I like this story because it's the opposite of that. It's just this one guy's journey through his childhood and all the shit that, like, has piled up in his life.
Well, I think, you know, I think that the intro by Damon Lindelof in the graphic novel kind of captures it perfectly by comparing it to the Twilight Zone. Because if you think about Twilight Zone, they're all small stories. But it's, like, often I don't want to say a big, not necessarily a big problem, but it's, like I said, it's a small story with, okay, big characters. And so I think that, like you said, Andy, comics tend to go for the showy stuff, you know, explosions and laser beams and stuff like that. But that's, like, the action movie type of thing. And I think we often forget that comics can really deliver from the drama drama side of things too. Mm-hmm. And this is a really good example of, I think I posted on Facebook or something when I finished reading that this comic reminded me of how underappreciated comics can be as a storytelling medium, especially by people who are not regular readers, or even people inside that do read comics regularly, like me, because I always I tend to read the Cape type stuff.
Yeah.
So it's easy to forget about comics like this, and this comic plus things like Saga really, they reminded me of what I'm missing by sticking to the big two.
Yeah, and I think Saga does a good job of, I think, towing the line between something like this and something like Court of Owls, or yeah. even a bigger story than that. Like, it does a good job of towing the line of having this universe in the background that has the big epic war between science and magic and all this kind of stuff, but that's not the focus of the book at all. The focus of the book is this couple and these few characters, and I think it does a good job of making that balance happen. But this just goes, like, balls to the wall. It's just character in a shitty town in Nova Scotia. And I like, yeah, I think it was Damon Lindelof in the intro said it was like Twilight Zone, right? That this feels like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. I think is a great description. I think that's awesome. And it makes me wonder why there aren't more comics like that or like this.
For all we know, there are. We're just missing them. I think that's what we...
That's the takeaway here?
Yeah.
I think it's actually a genre to write. That's very difficult to write, because if you think about it, you have to have a proper balance between normal and supernatural. Because here, like, I kind of want to talk about this later. I didn't know if it was a literal or figurative ghost story. It could have been either, maybe. And Twilight Zone, as the introduction said, like, it teaches you a moral, but it's never hitting you over the head with it. And that's kind of, like, a hard balance to find, and then a hard combination to do, because it's just so strange, and not too many people, I think, even think of mixing, you know, kind of a miniature morality play with a quasi-supernatural genre.
Well, I mean, yeah, it is a difficult genre to write, definitely, but I think comics is a good medium to do it in, because you can make transitions happen in comic books that you can't make in a novel, or that you can't make on television, at least not for cheap, or not with the kind of graphics we have today. Like, you couldn't do some of the stuff in here without having it either be corny because the graphics were cheap, or obviously done up. Like, those kind of things, I think, pull you out of it. But in a comic book, you already are conditioned to view the world through the lens of the artist. And in this comic, that works out really, really well, because the penciling and the inking, Jeff Lemire's art in this is awesome, and it works perfect for this kind of story. What did you guys think of the art?
I really liked it. I mean, first off, the inking did give you, like, this very watery sense. You could tell it was done with some sort of wet medium, and it's blotchy everywhere. And it's almost like the sky is kind of just a smear that blends into the ocean. And it's so sketchy, it disassociates you from reality. You don't know... Or there's nothing solid about the world that Jack lives in.
Yeah, and I think it works especially well, or at least amazingly well, when he's sort of coming back from consciousness, and you get the rough outline, then you get the full outline, then you get the inked outline, and then we're back to reality. Then he's woken up. It works really, really well for those kinds of transitional things. But the other thing I really appreciate about the art was the level of detail. Like, when he wakes up again and he's in the ghost town. Right, I'm gonna call it that. Like, when he wakes up and everybody's gone, and he keeps saying, "I never noticed how loud the birds were," and that's when I realized almost every time there's an outdoor scene, there's a bird flying by, there's a seagull flying by. Like, it's not something I had noticed, but they're sort of always there. They're just ever present in this town of Tiggs Bay. But after that line, they're gone. They're gone when he wakes up and comes back.
Yeah, and I don't know, there were some scenes where you notice the birds, because they come across as, like, they're filling the whole panel, and it's, mm-hmm. you're meant to know it's the ocean, but at other times, it just kind of blends in until they point it out to you, but that's how actual birds are, right? If you live by the coast, you stop noticing them.
Yeah. Yeah, and oh god, that one scene where the seagulls are kind of forming a river through the sky and the ocean is down below. Man, this art is like sketchy, but some of the pages are just beautiful. Just so well done.
Well, I noticed as I'm flipping through this, well, it looks like it's pencil and ink and like, it looks like watercolor. I mean, it's hard to call it watercolor because it's not in color, but yeah, it looks
black
like
the watercolor.
The parts where he uses the watery effect, it looks like it's all either when he's underwater or when he is in his memory or imagination and stuff. All the ones where he's in reality are just pencil and ink. Hmm. So it's not just the water that's wet, it's his memories and subconscious and stuff. So it's one of those like subtle cues of transition from a certain state of consciousness, I guess you could say.
Well, I hadn't even noticed that when I was reading through
it. I didn't notice it either until I decided to. I'm just like flipping through the pages, and I'm noticing. I notice as, you know, going from the beginning, all the pages where he's interacting with his wife are all, there's none of the watercolor effect until we get to that first scene where he's welding underwater, and then flips, you know, as you go through it, all the, he's still underwater and it stays that way. But then when he's talking to his partner who's up on the boat, that the parts with the partner aren't in the watercolor effect. So even between the panels on the same page, the effect changes. Mm-hmm. So it's a really subtle thing, and I didn't realize it until just now.
Yeah, I didn't either until you pointed that out, but that I'm looking back now, and that's actually a really neat effect. And I don't know, it's kind of that subtle work that's going on in the art here that I think is part of what makes this really good. Did you notice that all of the panels are very uniformly laid out? They tend to all be like a certain size. There's often like 9x9 grids or 3 rectangles going down, and it's super solid compared to how the inking actually works.
Yes, and I think it works to the advantage of the framing, especially when you get, there's this rigidity that the art and as a comic form wants to convey with the framing, but isn't quite there with the reality of what Jack is going through. Like, a good example for that is when you get the 3x3 grid, right? The 9 panel grid on the page. And the first three are like scene 1, scene 2, scene 3, but then panels 4 through 9 are like one big image just cut up within those frames. Like, there's one where it's like an establishing shot of sort of the harbor. There's another one when he does it when he's in the doctor's office. It happens a couple times. I really like that effect too. It works really well for this comic.
Wow. I never even, like, the scenes that you specifically pointed out, I didn't, once again, notice that until you said it. But that's, like, really cool.
See, but that's another cool effect, too, is because it gives you that one larger image, but dividing it up like that, because it's frames, because we're comic book, maybe because we're comic book readers, but it has the effect to pull your eye and focus on the specific details in that larger frame. It has a great effect of grounding you into the art when you need to be grounded into it. Like, especially that scene with the doctor. Like, you've seen what he went through. You know he's not crazy. Well, he's crazy, yeah, but he's not oxygen deprived or something. He had an experience down there, and it's changing him. But in the doctor's office, you need that focus on the detail to ground you into the reality of, okay, but really now, if he's just crazy, then there's something really, really problematic going on here. Like, he could just be in a really fucked up position. It might not have anything to do with the watch or his memories or his father or whatever. It might just be that he's oxygen depraved and this is really serious. And I like that the art pulls you into the minute details and grounds you into the reality of the moment like that, even though it's one big scene.
Did you guys think that he was suffering from a mental disorder, or that he was actually experiencing something otherworldly?
You know, I think it's, I mean, obviously it's not clear what he's going through. I don't know. I feel like that's a question that I don't need answered, because I think in the context of the story that it doesn't matter. It's a really interesting question to ask, but it didn't occur to me as I was reading. Is this a haunted watch, or is he having some kind of mental breakdown underwater? I don't know. All I have to say, that was just a roundabout way of saying good question. So you want to take a stab at it, Andy?
I mean, if you have to sit here and psychoanalyze the guy, he's obviously got a lot of baggage from his father, and it's stuff that he doesn't realize he has. And there's a bunch of things that if I were a psychiatrist that I could diagnose him with. One would be dissociative fugue. That's sort of when you... dissociative fugue happens. A person wakes up in another state using another name, has no idea how they got there. Like, just, you get to a breaking point, you break, you become a different identity, you go, you try to lead a different life. But once your real identity that's been buried works out whatever made it break, it kind of resurfaces, and your dissociative fugue personality sort of dissipates. So that's why, like, you just wake up in another state and realize, what the fuck am I doing here? Because that part of you has been suppressed because it needed to be. And something like that might be going on here with him. He might be in a dissociative state when he goes down underneath and he breaks from reality when he grabs the watch, because he might, as he's touching that watch, as he's seeing it again for the first time in, what, 30 years? No, not 30 years. 25, right?
Yeah, 20-something years.
Yeah, 20-something. It's been 20-something years since he's seen that watch. I mean, he's thinking about it again because he thought he saw it down there, but this is probably a memory that he's had buried forever, right? He probably hasn't even wanted to think about it, but it's obviously been affecting his life. Like, his wife sees it. His mom sees it. They're like, why are you here? His coworkers see it. Like, you have a friggin' degree from a university. Why are you working on a rig? You know, but he can't interact with those memories because he's locked them away. So he doesn't see why he's stuck in this town. He doesn't really know. He just thinks he likes being out there. But really, there's some part of him that needs to be out there.
Well, it's almost like he's out there because he has this unfinished business with himself and the memory of his father, right?
Yeah.
We don't see you. We get to the end, and it's a happy ending in that he gets reunited with his family, which was what his goal was. He was trying to get back to that once he realized that what he had lost by spending so much time focused on the past. But was this such a wake-up call that he's able to move on? Like, he's wrapped up this business, and so now he can leave Tiggs Bay behind and move on with his life and do something better? We don't know.
I don't know. I don't think he'll have moved on. I mean, he maybe interacted with his memories in a new way and realized what happened to his father. But my God, that realization, this guy's going to still have like years of therapy.
You don't think that his experience, like, and the flashbacks he had and that break he had kind of made him undergo a significant change that might actually fix him? Because I totally felt like it had a happy ending, and he can now walk away resolved, and, you know, like, he realized that part of why he wanted to find his dad was he felt responsible for his death, and he said, you know, my dad ended like this, but I don't have to. And he crossed out, he revised so much of his own history that he had already written, history from the future. Because that totally makes sense. But, you know, and then he comes home and his son is born, and it's like a new beginning for him. He can be the father that his father never was. So, I don't know, I felt really positive about the end on this.
Oh, I feel super positive about it too, but I mean, no matter how much he gets resolution from his memories, I think it's more that he's removed a block in his psyche, you know, like, he's had all this stuff in him that he hasn't known where it comes from, hasn't been able to resolve it because he's locked those memories away. he's locked the thought that it's his fault away. And now suddenly he's coming to this realization. And as he comes to the realization, he knows who his father is. He knows what happened. He knows that his father not only would have been there to take him out trick-or-treating, but it's he was trying to be even better than that. Like, his father really, really was trying. He wasn't a great guy, but he was trying. And he's realizing that he can not just try, he can be the good guy, too. He just has to step up and do it. I think that resolution is awesome in this story. But I still think he needs years of therapy.
Okay, I'll accept that.
Because seriously, the realization that your father died because he was doing something for you is pretty rough.
Yeah, especially if you hero worshipped him.
Oh god, yeah. He killed your hero. What did you guys think of the wife as a character? What was her name? Susie.
I thought she was a totally reasonable person in the face of, you know, considering what she was going through.
Yeah. I think we're almost supposed to feel a little like she's an antagonist just because she's so outside of her husband's perspective, which we're in. But at the same time, everything that she wants is totally normal.
Yeah. Can you please build a damn crib? It's not a big request. But yeah, I think we're sort of biased against her because of our point of view being with Jake. But when you step out of that point of view, you do see everything she's doing is pretty normal. And when he's sort of breaking down and makes her break down, like, of course, she's 9 months fucking pregnant. He needs him so bad. Or she needs him so bad right now. And he's just, like, off diving in the middle of a fucking storm. Like a crazy person.
And I think it's totally reasonable that although he tries to be there for her while he's there, she thinks that he doesn't want to be, you know, part of this family, because the moment he's home, he's like, I want to go back out to the rig. And then when he's there, he's super out of it. I mean, that doesn't feel like a healthy relationship in any way.
Yeah, but he's been able to get by long enough making excuses to her, like, oh, I need to go back out there. Oh, I'll be back in time for, you know, I'll be back in time for the birth, no problem. I just need to go out. You're not due for like a month. I just need to go out for like 2 weeks, and then I'll be back in time by the time the baby's here. You know, like, he can keep making excuses for her and keep getting out there to that release that he needs, but if this hadn't happened to him, there's no way they would have had a happy family. Just no way.
Yeah, it's actually kind of sad that he had to go through this, but I mean, that's kind of another Twilight Zone thing that was pointed out in the introduction. The main character has to have a flaw, and it's what makes him so sympathetic and interesting. Because it's like, we know that Jack isn't... It's Jack, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We know he's not a bad guy, and he thinks about his wife and child, and he wants to work hard. He cares about his family, especially his father, but at the same time, he's not doing it right.
So, okay, I've had this... We kind of touched upon this at the beginning, at the top of the show. I really have a hard time getting into monthly comics, and I have a hard time with the price point of most graphic novels being around $20. But I really, really do think that there's room in the comic book world for something close to this as a regular source of entertainment. Maybe not necessarily so big of a project, but stories nowadays, especially the capes and the monthly issues, are so big. They're 6 to 12 to 14 issues. Like Court of Owls and the Night of Owls is 14 issues. And I don't even know if that resolves all the Owls stuff. And that doesn't even include all the side stories. Like, these stories get to be so large. I mean, probably so that you buy all 14 issues, sure. Mm-hmm. But in terms of reading and digesting it, it's like, I will pay you $2 more to give me a bigger issue so I can have a more satisfying whole experience. And I think that that's the sort of direction that if comics wants to keep to its audience, its core audience, which is aging, that's what it's going to have to do. Like, I don't want to go into the comic book store every week and pick up 20 pages, five of which are ads, you know, just random ratio, probably even higher than that. But it's like, it doesn't feel like I get enough story in a monthly comic anymore to satisfy me. But something like this is like an experience. This is great to read. I would rather sit and read this for 2 hours than watch a movie.
Well, I think another part of the problem with monthlies, and especially with the big two, is that in order to keep you buying month to month, is that you don't actually get much story in a given issue. They give you just enough to keep you interested, and you know, they use the continuity to their advantage. Like, I'm a sucker for continuity. I love these complex backstories and stuff like that. On the one hand, it makes me kind of crazy because there's so much to it, but on the other hand, I love it. But I think that they can succeed with this type of storytelling, like you said, maybe not on the same scale, but instead of having an ongoing story every month, have some kind of show like or some kind of comic that's like Twilight Zone or Outer Limits or something like that, where it's a different story every week or month. You know Outer Limits, right?
Yeah, I know. I haven't thought about that show in a long time, and I got excited when you brought it up. Sorry.
Like, I think comics used to be like this. There was, I can't even think of a title, but there were comics where it would be a character in one story 1 month, and then the next month it would be something different.
Yeah, it used to be like Strange Tales or Tales of Mystery.
Yeah, and so, or, you know, these kind of comics would go, they would carry a story for a few issues and then switch again to something else. And I feel like we don't get that anymore. Maybe I'm just looking at the wrong titles.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing too. You say looking at the wrong titles, but a big part of that is when you walk into the comic store, what's on the shelf and what's up front. You know, I think a lot of stuff either doesn't get ordered by comic book shops or is buried in the rack, is not pushed out in front of the eyes of new readers. Like, a couple months ago, we read Creator on Heroes, I think the first 3 issues, and that's already been killed off. Because I think, I mean, in interviews, Jimmy Palmiotti, the guy who put it together, said that comic book shops just weren't ordering it. You know, when they ordered it, it would sell. That's no problem. But the comic book shops weren't ordering it. They weren't putting it on the shelves. They weren't putting it out in front of readers. And something like this, if I pick this up in a shop and I read the first 2 pages, I would think, man, this is fucking great. Maybe I want to buy this. But like, as it is, if I don't know it exists, I'm not going to like go through the giant wall of graphic novels and trade paperbacks and see, oh, Underwater Welder, what is that? And grab it and read it. You know, like, part of it's on the comic book shops too, to put this out in front of you, you know. And I feel like all we get put out in front of this is the Cape comics.
I mean, that's the comic industry's bread and butter, so I can understand where they're coming from. But you know, who the comic book shop, it's not the comic book shop's responsibility to push something new, right?
It's their responsibility to make money.
The industry needs to promote this kind of stuff more, but they're not focusing resources on even creating it. It seems like, at least not the publishers that have the, you know, the budget and the power to make really big advertising and a big advertising push. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I guess it's up to, I mean, who should be the person that's promoting this kind of thing. I mean, I guess readers could be the ones evangelizing this kind of thing, but at the same time, if the readers don't know about it, then, you know, what? Who does it fall to? I don't know. I'm going to look. I really like Jeff Lemire, and he has some other books published through Top Shelf. One's called Essex County, and it's supposed to have been won some awards too, and so I want to check that out. But I wouldn't even know about any of this if this hadn't come, if Underwater Welder hadn't been one of the best of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe because this is such a great comic, it will be a boon for this type of thing, this type of storytelling. But who really knows, right?
I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like, it came across to me very much like BPRD or Hellboy. And, you know, it's not just like the genre and the art style. There's kind of this great indie feel to the whole thing. And I know this is a contained story, but I feel like, you know, Hellboy is just one out of so many, but there are some good chances for great things to be happening. But at the same, you guys are right. The industry really needs to think, like, you know, people want variety. They want something new and exciting and kind of intellectually stimulating. And we get that sometimes in Cape comics, but, you know, those really do tend to be more about the action.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm just bringing this up and harping on it because if I feel like there's anything wrong with this comic, it's that if we hadn't done the series, if I hadn't looked up Best of 2012 lists, I would have never heard of this, never known about it, and probably never read it. And I feel like that's not necessarily an injustice or like a travesty. Those both sound like exacerbations of the situation, but it would make me sad if I would have never even heard about this, knowing now how good it is. And it's like, I want to figure out how or why or something. I don't know, because it seems to me with comic book sales going down all the time, you do need new readers. But at the same time, I get the feeling that readers are lost is because the industry isn't evolving with its aging demographic. You know, this is something that hits like right at our demographic. Like, we're late 20s heading into early 30s with kids. Like, hello, that's exactly the main character here. You know, like, it seems like it's not unreasonable to try and push more stuff like this. Or at least try new things, you know? Like, not just get Oracle out of the chair again. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's so easy to just do the rehash and be like, you know, someone died, now they're back. Now the old hero is the new hero again, and the new one's the old one, and blah. And anytime you try to bring in a new hero, like, especially in Cape comics, I think it can really be hit or miss, as we can tell by, like, the hundreds of, you know, really stupid heroes no one has ever heard of and no one cares about.
The Web.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They have main, you know, they have front-runner sellers. And how are they supposed to spend money and devote resources to some random dude, you know, who's just kind of a mock-up of another hero? Whereas when you have something like this, it's its own thing. People aren't going to look at it and say, oh, you're copying such and such. And I feel like there's not as much competition because it's a one-time deal, too. It's not going to be a monthly drain on resources for a publishing company.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard great things about comics on Kickstarter, and I think I'm going to start looking there for fun stuff to read, because I think that's sort of where this kind of comic is more prevalent. I don't know, maybe we need to do like a Kickstarter series of episodes, like the Best of Kickstarter or something. I don't know, it's just, I'm harping on the point so we can move on after this, but just, it seems so sad.
Yeah.
At least it feels like it to me. So is there anything else you guys wanted to bring up about this comic? I mean, our notes are pretty barren. It's the wonderfully great problem of a wonderful comic is that there's just, what are you going to say other than this was awesome?
Yeah, we don't have anything good. I mean, we have plenty of good to say about it, but that only can carry the episode so far, right?
Yeah. Well, I am glad that we saved this for last in our Best of 2012, because it's the best of the Best of 2012, I think. Ooh, that's what we can do. What of these last four have you liked the most? Saga, Court of Owls, Hawkeye, and Hawkeye, My Life as a Weapon, and Underwater Welder. Ooh, you know, when I say them back, I don't know if I want to say that this is the best of the four.
Okay, so I'm going to try to rank them.
Okay.
I'll go bottom to top. So
okay.
In number fourth four. Place, number four is Court of Owls, which I really love. Number three is Hawkeye, because I was so pleasantly surprised with that comic. Three is Saga. I like Saga a lot. And number one is definitely this. This comic just had, I don't know, I like a lot of things about it, and although I'm not going to go into detail about it, but this comic hit close to home on some level. So,
yeah, like I said, this demographic, the demographic that would be reading this, us, we are very close to being Jack. You know, and a lot of us share some of Jack's issues. A lot of us are about to be fathers and mothers, and a lot of us are in our 30s or late 20s, and it's like, this will hit a home for a lot of people. It's a good comic to spread the joy. Or, not joy, that's a weird word for this comic.
No.
I don't know. To spread comics to everyone. Let everybody see how great of a medium it is. What about you, Jen?
I feel like it's going to be skewed because I tend to have the strongest feelings about the things I just read, and I really have to think about it in terms of memorability. Memorability. I would say, for me, Batman was in fourth place.
Really? Well, yeah. We didn't get your rating for Batman. We got your rating for Hawkeye, but I forgot that you weren't there for the Batman
episode. Oh, yeah, I was out sick that day.
Yeah.
I would have given Batman, I think, a 3.5 or a 4. I'm a little wavering on that just because it was so spooky and cool, but at the same time, I don't know if I could dedicate myself to reading that many issues because I think it's Court of Owls, Night of Owls, and then doesn't it continue on into, like, a Death in the Family or something?
Death of the Family is not...
It's separate?
Not related.
Yeah, it's not related.
Good to know. Yeah, I would say, like, upon reflection, maybe a... 4 for Batman. But it didn't have the creative force that, for instance... Actually, no. I'm being really dumb because I totally forgot about Hawkeye.
Yeah, you hated Hawkeye. Well, not hated.
I didn't hate it, but I did not like it. Okay, I was just being silly there. I disliked it enough that I didn't remember I read it. No.
And so, here we thought it was going to take a whole month.
Hawkeye was far bottom because, as I mentioned when I rated it, I did not find it memorable or interesting. And clearly, it didn't last a week. So, whoops. Followed by Batman, which I would give a 4. Saga was such a, like, it was a creative force, and I was annoyed at the way they put together the trade, because I felt like, although it was a cool ending point, it would have been better as a chapter end rather than as, like, a book end. Mm. And I think this is what, I was so emotionally embroiled in this, and, you know, I'm not quite at the same point in life as you guys are. I'm not getting married or having kids, but I felt a real sympathy for this main character. It didn't necessarily...
He's just a, like, dude trying to get through life.
Yeah, and he's not likable, but you can really have empathy for him, I think. You can really feel what he's going through, and his problems and his wife's problems are understandable. There's no villain. It's just, you know, some bad stuff in the past he has to get through, but it's done so well and in such, like, this wonderfully spooky way that it's very unique, and I think I will remember this. I think I'll remember this a year from now or 5 years from now because it made an impact, and when I read it, I had to sit back, as I said at the beginning of the episode, I had to, like, kind of stand back a little and just be like, wow, that was an experience. So, yeah, this would be number 1 out of the 4, definitely.
Yeah, I'll be the odd one. I'm going to put Saga at the top because I really, really love Saga. I think Saga does a good job of focusing in on the personal relationships while having that big epic story happening in the background of what's going on. And I really like the art in Saga. Not that I don't like the art in this too, but I really loved Saga, and I want to keep reading more and more and more of it. This would be second, and third for me would be Hawkeye, beating out Court of Owls, just because I was really enamored with Hawkeye's art. The writing was good, but I was really enamored with the art and the style and the feel of Hawkeye. And Court of Owls last, just because it's a great comic, it's a great cape comic, you know? It's a really good Batman story, but I feel like that's what it is. It doesn't feel like it's so good that it breaks out of that box and is a great comic, or it's a great story. It's just a great Batman comic, you know? So, okay, I guess we'll... How about we just break down and actually rate this thing now? We've been dancing around it for, like, the last 10 minutes. Jen, go.
5. Without a doubt. As I said, I think I'm going to remember this one 5 years from now, and that's saying something, because we read a lot of comics.
Yeah, we do.
We
read one, like, every week, at least.
At the very least, yes. It really was like watching a really good episode of The Twilight Zone. And I think anyone who has watched a really good episode of The Twilight Zone knows exactly what that means. And if they don't, then they're not the sort of people I associate with anyway. So why would they be listening to this writing? oh, man, I really felt for these characters in a way that I'm so rarely connected with comics. It's something I get when I read, like, a really, really, really good book. And yes, there are certainly comics that kind of do that, you know, level of engagement, but this was just... It blew me out of the water. I didn't even plan that pun. I think I've said all I need to say about it. Like, the art was great. The story was just so right. It was correct in its execution. So a 5.
All right. David?
Definitely 5 as well. Like Jen said, these characters were so engaging and sympathetic. Everybody in the story, even Jack's father, who isn't painted to be such a great person, he's even sympathetic in that he... You know, it seems like he genuinely does try, even despite his flaws, which really hold him back from being, you know, from being a good father. He tries so hard that in the end, it's what kills him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the art in this is so subtle that it and so perfect for the story that it sets the tone so well. And like Jen said, this is a comic I'm going to remember for a long time, and I'm so happy that I have the trade to keep on my shelf and pull out and read again sometime in the future when my memory of this has gotten a bit foggy. So, yeah, this is definitely one of the best comics of 2012. So, yeah, 5 for me.
Nice. I'll be the odd one out again. I'm going to give it a 4.5.
God damn it, Andy.
Just because I said a second ago that I like Saga better, I don't know. This is, but I mean, 4.5. This thing's fuck it. It's amazing. This is great. And I mean, if the only thing we could harp on about it was that it wasn't distributed better, like that's nothing to do with the quality of the comic.
I don't even think that's something we should knock the comic for. Yeah. You know?
No, I don't think it is. As a matter of fact, I have a single gripe with this comic, just one. It's that. While the art style is great, it has the tendency to make the characters look derpy when they're not supposed to. You know what I'm talking about. Like, sometimes just, it'll be a scene, it's pretty just normal, except the eyes are all fucked up and wacky, and it's like, herp derp, I'm a whiz rad, you know? It's just wrong, and it pulls you out of it for just a second. Just the little slightest second. At least it did to me. But that's like, that's such nitpicking. If I say, like, once every 10 pages, some guy's eyes were fucked up. Of course they were fucked up. You look at the art style, it's supposed to be a little fucked up. So it's really the only thing I can knock this for, but God, I don't know why I'm not giving it a 5. I don't have any good excuse. I'm going to give it a 5. It doesn't seem fair to knock it down for having derpy eyes. It's not fair. That said, I do like Saga, and I'm going to keep reading it. The other thing that... Okay, this is a good reason to bring it up to a 5. The resolution of this story is, like, perfect in that it's not too much, it's not too little, it's just he has the moment and he comes home. And I like that the timing is great. He doesn't get that. He doesn't go home and see the miracle of his son's birth. Like, he missed that because he was being a shitty father in that moment, right? Like, there are things that he's already missed that he shouldn't have missed because he was unraveling the same way his father was. But when he gets the resolution and comes home, it's at a great moment. He gets to come home to see his son in his wife's arms and, like, all of this great. It just, like, it's like, what's the song by the Beatles, Day in the Life, where it comes at the crescendo and there's just this beautiful chord at the end, just dung, just beautiful. It's just like the song builds up and you're like, what the fuck, how, where's this going to go? And then it's just like one simple note, just that, and you're set and it's awesome and it's perfect. It's all you need. It's just enough, not too much. It's beautiful. And I think that's what the ending of this comic was like. That's why I'm giving it a 5. I've rationalized it to myself and to America. So, yeah, that's the end of our Best of 2012 arc. Next week, we're going to start our new series called Sidekicks Moving Up. It's about sidekicks getting upgraded from sidekicks into their own heroes. So the first week, we're going to read Amadeus Cho's story. As he grows up from Amadeus Cho's sidekick of Hulk and Hercules into being the new Prince of Power, which just sounds badass. So, yeah, the trade paperback is Incredible Hercules, Prince of Power. It collects Heroic Age, Prince of Power 1-4 from 2010, and Hercules, Fall of an Avenger 1-2 from 2010. Both are Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente works. And then after that, we're gonna read Nightwing as he grows up from Robin into Nightwing. We're not going to read right as he makes the transition because it happened in Teen Titans during the 80s, which were horrible generally for comics. So we're going to read Nightwing, A Knight of Bludehaven, which is the beginning of his run as he picks his city, Bludehaven, and moves in. And like, I'm not even on the Teen Titans anymore. I am my own man and I'm moving into my own town. So that collects Nightwing 1-8. That's by Chuck Dixon with art by Scott McDaniel. And then we're going to end up with Captain America Winter Soldier, Bucky Returns from the Dead. And that collects Captain America 1-9 and 11-14. For some reason, issue 10 has nothing to do with this story, and I just didn't put it in the collection. But I'm sure you can read it if you want. That's by Ed Brubaker. And we have another arc after that all lined up and ready to go, too. But if you want to know what that is, we're not going to tell you right now. You got to go to the website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com, and click on the little button on the right. This is future shows, and you will get what we've got coming up for like the next month and a half out. It's awesome. We actually got shit planned. It is weird, but it feels good. So do that. And as always, if you got a suggestion for what you think we should do after like that list ends, like what do you want us to read? You can send us a recommendation at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And if you know, you think you have a brilliant idea and you want everybody to see it so that they can like it and share it and comment it on it or retweet it or whatever you want to do, we've got both of those, facebook.com/APSupercast and twitter.com/APSupercast. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Woo! All right, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.